Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Strance. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are coming to you live, of course, from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now joining us, as he does every week at this time on Wednesday, from Sportsnet's NHL coverage and a former NHL scout, he is our pal, Jason Bukala. Jason, thank you as always. How are you today?
Fantastic, fellas. We're just at the Rogers campus here in Toronto, getting ready for Las Vegas. So me and Sammy and the producers and everybody just pulling some video together and getting ready for the big trip.
Very exciting. At the Sphere, the last everyone in one place draft. How are you feeling about that? Are you excited about the change? Are you going to miss it?
I'm going to miss it a lot. I think it was the one unique thing that we did very well as a league. And you know, we're in competition with the other, you know, the baseball and the NBA and obviously the NFL. That's a, you know, an animal into itself. But I don't know. I just felt like it was something that we did that was very unique, and I'm going to miss it. I think that it's, in reflection, sooner than later, more people than not are going to miss it as well.
So there's a lot happening around the league right now, Jason, and we can talk about the Stanley Cup, of course, which is still ongoing, but then there's been a flurry of transactions as well over the last 24 hours or so, and including a big one here in Vancouver where the Canucks locked up Filip Hronek to an 8-year deal, $7.25 million AAV. What's your reaction to the new contract for Filip Hronek?
Well, ideally, I would have liked to see the number a little bit lower. I have to be perfectly transparent with that. I do see the value in a right shot defenseman who's, you know, at his age especially. So, you know, hopefully got even better hockey ahead of him. You know, last year got off to a fantastic start, as we all know, and it kind of flatlined a little bit in the back half, and his playoff was just okay. But, you know, as a group, there's a culture that's been built there, and he's part of the solution going forward. The right shot D, there's always an overpayment for these guys. Let's not forget. And I think that this contract, the value of it can age well at 7.25. You know, on my little kind of piece that I put together, trying to piece together all the options the Canucks might have in the offseason, I had him, you know, at Mackenzie Weegar type money at 6.25. But with the cap going up and all things being equal, I think it's probably pretty close. So, you know, it's you better off keeping them at that number than going shopping for somebody else, because then they could be more expensive.
Books, are our Cats in trouble?
I'll tell you, buddy, they look tight. Everything about them looks a little bit different now. I mean, even starting from the coach behind the bench, like everything just looks a little bit all of a sudden panic stricken, I guess is what comes to mind. You know, Bob has been just okay all of a sudden. And on balance, they haven't been able to stop the Edmonton Oilers from skating downhill and creating offense. And I'm not even talking about volume of shots. I'm just talking about trying to control the way that they play the game, which is obviously quick and skilled. So are they in trouble? I don't know if I want to go that far yet. Are they nervous? 100%. Am I nervous? Absolutely. And it didn't take Bill Zito more than 10 seconds after the game ended to start chucking water bottles around. So I think they're feeling it.
Do you think that impacts a team, just a reaction like that from a key executive?
I do, actually. I think personally for me, cameras are on executives all the time. We know that. You know, they're panning the box all the time. And if you would have looked to Zito's right, our left on the camera, you know, you're looking at Roberto Luongo, just, you know, stoic, right? Like, you just, whether they're, like, Lou gets excited when they win, but he also isn't losing his mind when they don't play well. And, yeah, I don't like it. I think that I understand the compete of it. Listen, Jancer, you and I have been around some general managers who are, you know, when we worked together in the past, that are, you know, animated, right? But just think there's a time and a place, and I'm not never show your card. You know, have a little bit more of a poker face. Don't look worried. Is my is my best advice.
Well, especially because, you know, they are still up 3-2 in the series, and I completely understand that the pressure has totally shifted to them, and there's, in some sense, there's no sense denying that or pretending that that's not the case, but you still only have to win one more game to win the Stanley Cup, and I do wonder if what you're saying, right, seeing that kind of panic almost from the leader of your organization undercuts any kind of sense of calm you're trying to establish back in that dressing room.
Well, it what it does is it presents questions like what we're talking about right now, the three of us. And, you know, that draws negative attention to a scenario where you're obviously in a high leverage situation. Your true colors shine at the hardest times at anything you do, whether it be a job, lawyer, doctor, you know, a hockey executive, etc. Never show your true colors. That's just how I feel about it. Don't get too high. Don't get too low. Your guys there in Vancouver, I mean, honestly, you know, I'd almost be wondering if they were awake at the time, the way that they sit up there in the box. So, I mean, it's completely different, right? It's and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, there were some great shots of them in the playoffs after big goals where it was just completely stone-faced, no reaction whatsoever. To the point where I was watching and I was like, is this like stock footage or something? Like, this couldn't possibly be after what we just saw, but it was. They were that,
exactly,
as you said, that stoic somehow in those big moments.
It could have been AI. Like, it could have been an AI thing, you know, like you see that stuff floating around now. That could have been just an AI shot. They're not even in the building.
Yeah, exactly. It was absolutely incredible. Okay, obviously the other big story in these Stanley Cup finals right now is what Connor McDavid is doing. A second consecutive 4-point night last night to drag his team back to the series, to drag the series back to Alberta. He now has 42 points in 23 playoff games right now. That's an absolutely incredible number. I mean, do you have to go back to Gretzky and Lemieux to find another playoff performance this impactful in the NHL?
I really do believe that. I mean, I guess there could be an argument made. It's different with different players that have come through and they've done different things for their teams, you know, like a Patrick Waugh when he was at his best, you know, between the pipes or, you know, whether it would be in Montreal or Colorado. But from a pure impact offensive point production, that's exactly where I'm going with it. It's the Gretzky-Lemieux type of comparisons. And what's really fascinating for me, fellas, is that at the beginning of the series, I thought that the matchup against Barkov specifically was being won by Barkov. Like, I really did. I wasn't sure if there was going to be enough push through or push back. There was a lot of perimeter handles, but not the high danger quality that you would normally see for a McDavid, or even like the dart and dash to the middle of the ice. Now, listen, fast forward to now, and they got a little bit of confidence, and then it's gone to another level, but he's literally taken that team on his back. It's fascinating to watch, and it just goes to show he's the best player in the world, and these are the reasons why.
Books, I'm going to throw something. I'm going to throw a hot take at you, okay?
Please.
I'm increasingly convinced when you consider the era adjustment that this is just the best hockey player we've ever seen. Now, I know most people don't want to give that to him until he's, like, won a cup, but what's the argument against that?
Probably just the cup. And, I mean, let's also don't forget here that, you know, he has encountered some extraordinarily bad luck in terms of the geopolitical landscape, COVID, all these other things. So from a national team perspective, he's been stunted there, hasn't he? You know, like there's no Gretzky dropping it to Lemieux in the Canada Cup in 1987 on McDavid's resume yet, but it's not his fault. So if he could, I will say this, if he can drag this team to a Stanley Cup, a sweep here, which hasn't happened since what, like 1947, I think they'll leave something like that. If that were ever to happen, 100% best player, I believe, probably in the history of the game, by the time his career is done. And the argument could be made right now today that if you were to line up all three of those guys at the same time, that that he would be better than the other two, being Gretzky and Lemieux. So I know it's era adjusted. I know that we can sit here and bark at each other all day long and have a beer and chicken wings over it. But I mean, how lucky are we as a fan of the game to be witnessing this type of player?
Yeah, it's actually become tough for me, Books, because I think our audience in Vancouver doesn't want to hear too much, you know, McDavid praise. But it's not just the speed, although that's unbelievable, and it's not just the skill. It's like, I swear you can count on one hand the amount of 50-50 battles this guy hasn't won this series.
Right, it's the skill and the will. I mean, true champions start to combine the two. And he's not there yet in terms of winning a team championship. But again, I mean, you just hit it right on the head. Last night, like his pushback, his push through off the wall, even when they're trying to agitate him, they're chasing him now, right, guys? Like they're chasing him in the game. And that's all you got to know. And I'm not just talking about speed, like you just said, too. I mean, he's going to get it when he doesn't have it, and he's not giving it back when he does, and he's taking bumps to make plays, all these things. So skill plus will equals championships eventually. I don't know if it's going to happen this time, but if it does, this is historical performance for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. Coming back from 3-0, if they're able to pull it off, would be an absolute all-timer. And, hey, on the international point, hopefully the Four Nations gets a ton of buy-in and everyone loves it, because that's going to be his first opportunity to really do it. And it's just a crime that we haven't been able to really see him on that stage alongside Nathan MacKinnon, alongside Sidney Crosby. So I can't wait for that one. All right. Around the league, a couple of big transactions today, big trades today, Jason. And we'll start with the probably the more surprising one, which is the Kings trading Pierre-Luc Dubois to the Washington Capitals. Darcy Kemper going the other way. A 1-for-1 deal. The Kings clear some salary cap space and save a ton of years of term on the back end of that PLD deal as well. We saw how miserably it worked for Pierre-Luc Dubois in LA. From Washington's perspective, what logic do you see in this acquisition for the Capitals?
I'm torn. I have to be honest. I don't know that he's going to pull on a Washington Capitals jersey. And here's my, and I could be totally off base by this, but I'm sitting here breaking it down. If the Washington Capitals were to buy out Pierre-Luc Dubois after this transaction, the cap hit against would be $1.3 million until the late, 2039 or whatever it ends up being. If on balance, the trading out of all of Kemper's money and the buyout of Pierre-Luc Dubois long-term, it's a wash money-wise. So I'm not a huge Pierre-Luc Dubois fan. I don't know that the Washington Capitals aren't in transition a little bit. I know you got Obi there chasing records and stuff like that, but I don't know where their team is at. And I'm not so sure that this guy's the guy you want to have in the room for 7 years to build around. Like, I'm not convinced of it, guys. I don't want to be that guy, but I can't put it any other way. Like, I feel like he's just, there's something there. So I'm not so sure that he pulls on a jersey to be, and I'm not, listen, I have no inside information on that. I haven't talked to Freege. I haven't talked to anybody. I'm just trying to strategically take a look at this, because then it opens up all kinds of extra cap space for the Capitals to do other things with other players on the open market, whether it be adding another goaltender, although, Lindgren looks like he has the net. Mm-hmm. So if he does stay, it's what version are you going to get of Pierre-Luc Dubois? Is it going to be a consistent one? Is he going to be happy for the entire next 7 years? Where's his mindset at? All kinds of different things. I'm lukewarm on the stock, I have to be honest.
Yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of people are, understandably so, right? Because he goes and kind of gets to go to LA, gets the big contract, and then just does so little in his year there with the Kings. And now, we heard from the agent, or the agent put out on Twitter that, hey, Luke's excited, or Pierre-Luc Dubois is excited to go there, but it's still not a team he's choosing. So I think that question about his mentality is totally fair. On the other hand, like this guy, third overall pick, so much pedigree, so much talent, so much skill there. You got to think at a certain point that he wants to kind of change his reputation, right? That he wants to show people, hey, I'm worth all of this attention. I'm worth these teams taking chance after chance after chance on me. And maybe this is the tipping point for him to kind of bring that effort consistently.
I think that's well said, Jay. I mean, on a personal level, I think everybody, I don't know any human being who doesn't take it personally if they leave someplace or they don't feel wanted. You know what I mean? Yep. Like it could be your job, could be whatever. Like it's human nature to be upset when you don't feel wanted. But my response to that, of course, is this: when you're making 8.5 sheets in the National Hockey League, the best league in the world, and teams are labeling you, or you've earned a reputation. That's the flip side, because when he is at his very, very best at the age of 25, he can do some really good things. There's absolutely no question about that. We've seen it. The consistency lacks. Take more pride in your product. Take more pride in yourself and how you present. Maybe going there, if it works, with Ovi and, the Tom Wilsons in the dressing room, the TJ Oshies even, like, they're going to hold him responsible or hold him accountable differently than some of his other stops. Carlson on the back end. So maybe that's the upside.
Yeah, I mean, if it works and he can play with Tom Wilson, who wants to be on the ice against those guys? That sounds miserable.
Nobody does, but there's just such a huge but. I have a hard time getting over it. Like, prove me wrong, buddy. Like, prove me wrong. That's all I'm asking him to do.
With L.A., right, on L.A.'s side of this, right, because it's like Kupari, it's Velarde. I mean, there's some good players that they lost in order to take this shot. It didn't work. They end up with Darcy Kemper out of it. Now, it improves their goaltending. They needed a goalie. They saves them $3 million in cap space, which, they can make hay with potentially this offseason. But is it better? Let me put it this way. Is it better to just admit the mistake and rip the Band-Aid off like this than it is to sit in it, even if the final sort of balance sheet looks deeply out of whack?
I don't think they had a choice. I think they had to move off of the mistake. It's hard to do. Obviously, you have to have the support of your owner and people in your organization to make a decision like that. But clearly, that conversation had to have been had. Like, you don't just walk away from the type of assets that you gave up to acquire the player, and then be stuck with Kemper at the end of the day. Like, that's just on balance, when you kick the trade down the road 2 years into it now, obviously that trade on paper looks, asinine, doesn't it? With what went out the door. So tough one, guys. But I do believe that Rob Blake's eating crow here a little bit and, trying to come up with a solution to get more stops. And that's hopefully what's going to happen. If not, this is a type of scenario long-term that ends up costing people jobs in the National Hockey League.
The other trade that happened. Go ahead, Dreds.
No, please. I thought you weren't jumping in.
Okay. The other trade that goes down this morning, Jacob Markstrom making the long rumored move to New Jersey. How important is this for the Devils to get Markstrom in to shore up their goaltending?
Huge for the Devils. Absolutely monstrous. I mean, they were the Devils. They're a better team than what they presented last year. They're on the uptick, or they should be on the uptick. They kind of feel a lot to me like what Florida felt like a few years ago, like they're on the cusp of something. And I think that, this acquisition gives the group a lot more confidence, and they just need more saves. And this is obviously going to do that. Actually, the tandem and goal, I'm pretty happy with it. Markstrom and Allen, Allen for one more year. And then they'll have to make a decision on what they do from there. But this is a huge upgrade for New Jersey. I have to tell you this, though, guys. Pretty pedestrian return for Calgary. Mm-hmm. So that just leads me to believe that Markey had a lot of say in what was going on, obviously, with this full no move. What doesn't stick well with me is that, yeah, you bring Ball back, who's an 82-game guy, big, rangy defenseman, long in everything he does. Occasionally he'll chip in some offense, but he's basically a defensive defenseman for the most part. But eating the money, like the 31% salary retention for 2 years, I understand, that maybe New Jersey needed to do it, but if I'm Calgary, I'm like, I need more than a 10th overall
It's lottery protected, I believe.
It's lottery protected in 2025.
Yeah.
And to me, the market calls for more than that for a goaltender who might be able to take a team on a run in playoffs.
And from the Calgary perspective, and Drance and I were talking about them just a little bit earlier in the show, kind of in passing, you know, there's been a lot of talent out the door over the last however long for Calgary, right? Obviously, Lindholm, Zadorov, Toffoli, now Markstrom. I mean, you go back even further to Gaudreau and Tkachuk and Monahan. They've lost a ton of talent, but they do still have, you know, Huberto on the big deal, Kadri on the big deal, Uyghur on the big deal long term. Like, how difficult a position is Calgary in right now in their cycle of team building?
I really thought it was going to be a retool in Calgary, not a rebuild in Calgary. I'm starting to get the feeling like they're a team that is, you know, on paper, they need a reset. There's no question about it. They have some name players there, but they don't have somebody in the middle of the ice who can get people the puck to make to get the most out of a Jonathan Huberto, for example. You don't have to look any further than what's going on in Florida with Sam Reinhart, although Reinhart plays some center as well. But when he does get a chance to play with Barkov, obviously the results speak for themselves. It was the same for Huberto playing with Barkey. I just don't know what the makeup of this group is. I don't know what they are. Like, I really don't right now. Obviously the offseason will dictate some things here, but boy, oh boy, like those are a lot of names you just said right there. And so two things, I don't know what the identity of the group is, and I'm not so sure. I don't know what the sum of the parts equals out to be either. I actually like their defense. I do. But now we're going to be really young in goal. But it is Dustin Wolf's time to earn the net at the NHL level. He's done everything he can at the American League level.
Well, yeah, and just your point about it maybe more of a rebuild than a retool. I mean, I look at a player like Rasmus Anderson. You talk about the blue line. I really like the player. If you're thinking longer term, you know, he's under contract for two more years. He's 27. Do you have to start thinking about, hey, maybe we move this guy and get some decent assets in return if this is going to be more of a long-term build?
Well, that's fascinating. Let's see what happens at the draft is my answer to that. You know, there's a lot of defensemen that are available in this draft class. And, you know, obviously they've got draft capital in the first round that might be able to actually, if you look at their draft capital, their draft board, period. Like, they've got four picks in the top two rounds this year. They got two firsts next year as well, guys. Of course, the New Jersey one, we don't know where that's going to land. But my point being that it's going to be fascinating to see what that cycle looks like, because they did acquire a lot of defensemen through their transactions this year in season as well, didn't they? Like, you know, on the back end, you know, they picked up Grushnikov from Dallas, for example, who I think he's an NHL defenseman who's going to be able to play kind of a two-way shutdown role. They've got, you know, Brustowicz is going to be on the come see eventually. That's a name I'm going to keep an eye on to see what happens there. The other name that I'm kind of interested to see what happens, and I don't know what his stock looks like, but, you know, Mangiapane at 5'8 this year, like, if he doesn't get off to a really good start, you know, is somebody going to be looking to purchase that midway through the year, hopefully catch more lightning in a bottle, because he needs to be way better. And let's not forget about what Kuzi's going to do there too. Like, what's Kuzmenko? What's the best version of him going to be? So this is where I'm at, right? Like, I'm just doing this off the top of my head, but I'm conflicted on what exactly this team is going to be.
I think they're going to be bad. Books.
Yeah, I don't.
They're going to be really bad.
The playoff team. Okay.
No, yeah. I don't think so. Books, appreciate
the Landon DuPont lot. They're going to tank for Landon DuPont in 2027. That's how bad I think they're going to be.
Well, I'll end it with this, boys. I know you want to go, but they better be good when they move into the new rink, because the honeymoon phase of a new building only lasts so long. So you better be hitting the ground with a good team to. Because a ticket won't be cheap, so that should be part of the plan.
Well, maybe Landon DuPont can help them sell tickets to the new barn eventually. Books, thanks for doing this as always, man. We'll let you get back to preparing for Vegas, and excited to chat next week when we're just a couple days away from the draft.
That sounds awesome. Looking forward to it, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Of course, that is Jason Bukala from Sportsnet's NHL coverage. As you heard, he'll be live in Vegas for the draft. Canucks don't pick to the until the third round. Right now, at least they're scheduled, but we'll still get lots of chance to chat draft.
Isn't it late in the third round, too? It's 93rd
100%, overall.
100%, yeah. I'm going on my incredibly messed up ankle, and it's just like, why am I doing this?
You're going to be twiddling your thumbs in Vegas. Hey, you'll talk to
Should
talk
be fun, it. Actually.
You'll talk to talk it. You'll get some great stuff from talk it.
I'll be honest. I'll be honest, it's probably a pretty good time to talk to everybody because there no one's going to have anything going on.
Yeah, just wait until they trade a third for Jake Gensel's rights. Then they're not going to pick till the fourth round.
Corey Pronman over The Athletic has his mock draft where he mocks literally every single pick in the draft.
Okay. Right? I'm excited. I'm going to go
and
check this out.
I highly recommend
getting hyped for third and fourth round guys.
Oh, I highly recommend going and seeing who the Canucks, like I immediately just like went and control F to the Canucks. And I was like, Theodore Munther, huh? Munther. And then I, you know, I'm really excited to do like Munther mash.
Well, this is like the Canucks are the
Munther's ball.
The Canucks are the team where that article has the most value for, right? Because if you're picking top 10, it's like you're awash with mock drafts and projections and all of you know exactly who it is. If you're not picking till the 90s, it's like it's hard to find even lists that have those guys on them, let alone mock drafts.
Do you know how little draft capital you have for me to not have a guy under the size of 6 foot who the Canucks should draft? Do you know how hard that is for me, Jamie? I don't even have a guy.
That's wild. Truly, truly wild. But yeah, Canucks don't pick until 93rd. So you can check out Corey Pronman's, it's always kind of a tongue-in-cheek exercise, I know, right? Projecting the entire draft, obviously. But you can go check out Corey Pronman's piece up at The Athletic. We got one more segment coming up here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We can continue to react to the Hronik deal, the flurry of moves around the NHL. What comes next for the Vancouver Canucks as we inch closer to free agency and the draft coming up next week. More on Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance with you live from the Kintech Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. One other bit of Canucks news that we should pass along as they continue to add depth to the right side of their defense in a slightly different tier than the Philip Hronik acquisition, but they signed Mark Friedman, who is a pending unrestricted free agent, to a one-year deal, $775,000. So, you know, factored in a little bit early in the season after he was acquired, then kind of Noah Juulsen passed him as the seventh defenseman, didn't see a ton of action after that, but you can understand why you'd like to keep him around in that kind of depth organizational role for the Canucks.
I have never seen a depth player as dialed in when they're not in the lineup as Mark Friedman. Like, that guy's so pumped after Canucks goals and like big hits and stuff in the press box. Like, he'll be like sitting behind you and you'll hear someone just like smack a desk. You know, like, he's dialed, just completely dialed into what this team is doing in terms of their success. I think that matters, like, especially because it's matched by the intensity you'll see from him at practice, right? Mm. He'll get under some teammates' skins sometimes, right? Like, he'll bring a high work rate to a rinse skate, much less a practice or a morning skate. Just completely focused, just an absolute pro, right? Like, I think it matters. Like, I think it matters even if you're 18th, 19th, 20th, 21st skater on the roster. Is that overwhelmingly competitive? Talks about it sometimes, right? Like, he wants guys who set the pace in practice. He wants guys, especially at the end of the roster, who model that type of behavior, who force the regulars. You know, you show up, maybe you're not feeling it on a Tuesday in November. Well, you better if you're in a one-on-one drill with Mark Friedman, because otherwise he'll make you look silly and your teammates will start doing stick taps and hooting and hollering. And, you know, he's that guy.
Yeah.
You want that guy, especially when it's a vet minimum salary and especially when they can play both the left and the right side. And especially when, you know, they got drafted in for 3 weeks playing top 4 minutes and did a creditable job. Makes a ton of sense to me that they'd want to keep Mark Friedman around for all of those reasons. And you know, that said, I don't think he's necessarily like, he's going to have his own big summer, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to have to come in and win a job. Club is definitely hopeful that Cole McWard can win a job next season, can maybe even be a regular. Club obviously is pretty high on Noah Juulsen. I still think there's hope that Tyler Myers will be back. Philip Hronek's now inked. And make no mistake, right? Like, the Canucks are not done. They're not done in terms of upgrading their defense, right? Like, again, the Hronek drive his own pair thing, you know, I sort of saw it as a negotiating tactic, but the more I ask around, especially in the wake of this deal, I think it's more an aspirational thing.
Yeah.
It's more that we think Hronek can be an offensive driver on his own pair, more in that like Montour role, but that's only going to become realistic if we can find another puck moving guy, another guy that complements Quinn Hughes. And that's going to require us to continue to upgrade our defense corps. Now, long-term, is that guy McWard? Is that guy Villander? I'm sure the organization's hopeful that it is. Again, I wouldn't go about penciling Villander into that role, given that, BU tried really hard to make him and Lane Hutson a thing. And I mean, you want training wheels for Quinn Hughes. You're not going to do better than Lane Hutson, right? Like, literally, puck-dominant, undersized, absolutely dominant offensive defenseman at the NCAA level. Villander really didn't figure out, like, it looked a lot more Tucker Poolman than Philip Hronek in those minutes. So, you know, long term, maybe it's about draft and develop. Maybe it's getting some bodies in internally. But I also do think if there's opportunities that present themselves for this team to keep leveling up their defense corps, I think they'll do it. Like, I think they'll be on the hunt for, you know, maybe another top four, or maybe even another top pair defenseman. I don't think it's as high a priority as a top six winger. But I do think there's an understanding that there's still work to be done on the defense corps too. So, I think Friedman's still going to have to win the job, but you can totally understand why they want him at training camp, why they want him in the organization, and why it's going to be pretty hard for, you know, your McWard types to unseat this guy. You know, even if he's not penciled in as one of their top six defensemen or even their first choice seventh defenseman, come Thanksgiving weekend.
Well, yeah, McWard is still, you know, he just turned 23. So McWard feels like a guy that's either going to be playing regular minutes or back in Abbotsford, right? Whereas obviously Friedman, that consideration doesn't apply. You can keep him as your seventh or eighth defenseman even, and you're really happy about that if McWard doesn't beat him out. And Rich in Cloverdale, and you were touching on it a little bit there, but Rich in Cloverdale texted in, does the signing of Friedman on the heels of the Hronek signing signal that Juulsen is being earmarked as the sixth defenseman this year, with the bulk of the remaining money going to forwards? And as you said, you know, now I did think it was interesting that yesterday when Patrick Alvin was talking about the Hronek deal, he name-checked Noah Juulsen as a guy who they thought could be a regular for them. He name-checked Cole McWard, as you're alluding to, someone they have high hopes for. But I think it is, I don't think they're going to be content to say, hey, Noah Juulsen, you're going to be a regular for us, and we're just going to ride with that. And hopefully Tyler Myers we're going to get him done, and he'll be our second pairing right shot defenseman. They're going to look for improvements there. Now, can you do Jake Guentzel at 9.5+, at 10, at 10+, as you're suggesting, and still have the money to go spend on a legit top four defenseman? That starts to get another legit top four defenseman. That starts to get a little dicey, right? And once you're in there. Yes. So you might have to make some compromises at that point. But I think especially if you don't land Guentzel, then you start to really look at, okay, where's another top four defenseman coming as a kind of follow-up to not getting Guentzel?
You can kind of do it, though. Like on the crossover, Dhaliwal, you know, shocker, Matt's not his strong suit, was doing his cap breakdown, you know, and I think he quoted a $17 million in functional cap space for the Canucks, but that number's not factoring in the 2.5 for Tucker Poolman. That they'll be, I mean, that's not cap space, that's LTI space, but they'll be able to exceed the cap by an additional $17 million. Also, because of how the Canucks ended the season, Cap Friendly currently still projects Nikita Tolopilo on the roster.
Right.
Right. So, you know, when I've been quoting the $20 million functional cap space, I've been removing Tolopilo from the roster. Now, they're still going to have to get Seelovs done. Like, some of this money will have to go toward a backup goaltender. And you know, I still remain convinced that the Canucks would do well to get an additional veteran depth guy for the NHL level, frankly, and have, you know, with the plan of using Seelovs' last year of waiver exemption to kind of be that swingman, make sure that he gets 50 games plus in what's still a crucial developmental year for a guy that I think we should be looking at now as having, you know, potentially like bona fide NHL starter upside, given what we've seen from him. So anyway, that's neither here nor there. I'm getting off on my old hobby horse rant. They should get a veteran goaltender. I don't know why I do this once a week, but I do.
It's because you're sick, sick. It's because you're you, man. Just lean into it.
Yeah, that's true. Point being,
why does the wind blow, Vance? It's just what the wind does.
I mean, you could do Gensel at 11, and well, I guess if you're doing Myers too, that's where it gets complicated.
Yeah,
right? If you without subtracting Mikheyev, that's probably not going to be able to add.
Mikheyev really comes into play, right? If you're talking about going out and getting that additional legit top four defenseman and doing Jake Gensel, not that it would be impossible without subtracting Mikheyev, but it feels like you, and that's the kind of scenario where, I mean, we've talked about not necessarily wanting to either buy out Mikheyev or attach a sweetener to move him. But if it's Gensel plus a guy you think is a top four defenseman, to me, then, okay, yeah, well, what are we talking about as a sweetener to move Mikheyev? Like, that's when it starts to become a reality. If you're talking about that adding that much talent to your organization, then I start to become a lot more okay with doing some sort of deal to get Mikheyev off the books.
Yeah, fair enough. So we'll see how the puzzle pieces all fit together. And, you know, Gensel, fun dream. We'll see if that actually comes to pass. A lot of competition,
yep.
You know, likely to form for his services. And again, I think the number is going to be bigger than, you know, what Canucks fans are dreaming up on Armchair GM in the final weeks of Armchair GM. So, you know, point being, I do think you could still add... You probably are more looking to add like multiple bodies in the like Soucy tier contract wise, like that Ian Cole, Zadorov tier, that $3 million, $3.5 million, probably buying you some 4 or 5 guys. But as we've seen, some 4 or 5 guys can give you more than 4 or 5 value.
Yep.
Now Myers might be one of those, right? Like Myers may end up being in that tier and then you bring in one more guy. But I guess more than anything, what I'd say is given this team's obsession with floor, right? Given the way that this team tries to not leave things to hope and chance, that's sort of a hallmark of how this management group's functioned over the last 18 months. I struggle to imagine coming into camp and it being like a three-way competition for right-handed D between Cole McWard, Noah Juulsen, and Mark Friedman. No. Like that, I really struggle to imagine that they wouldn't have, you know, a pretty significant vet that the club would have to unseat. I mean, you even think about their reaction. Like the Zadorov trade was partly a reaction to the Soucy injury, right? They weren't even willing to go a month without a guy of Soucy's quality in the lineup. So, you know, I struggle to imagine that bringing in, even if you extend Myers, bringing in another body for that right side, a guy with more of an NHL track record, a guy who, you know, you're less hopeful about. Like, and then if McWard wins the job, great. You solve that problem when it comes. If, you know, Juulsen wins that job, fantastic. You solve that problem. But, you know, we saw in the playoffs, right? Like, I think Juulsen's an everyday caliber NHL defender. He played, what, 56 games, something like that for the Canucks this past year.
Yeah, and was somewhere totally, around there.
Was totally fine.
Yeah.
But then you get into the playoffs and, you know, in both of his games, there was a moment where he was out on the ice at home against the toughest matchup, whether it was Philip Forsberg or, you know, the McDavid Dreisaitl. And, you know, that becomes a situation that I don't think you can be that comfortable with if you're aspiring to repeat as Pacific Division winners and win 50 games again and go deeper in the playoffs than you did this past season. So, you know, I think you're probably looking at, even with Hronek signed, trying to add two bodies on the right side and at least one on the left. And that is going to be tricky. But this club does still have a relative war chest of cap space and, you know, some ability to flesh that out. You know, it might not be $3 million guys. It might be $2-3 million guys and a $1 million guy. It might be that you have an opportunity to swing for the right fit and it's a $7 million guy and two $1 million guys. But, you know, I do think you're probably I think you're hopeful. You should be hopeful of bringing in like three additional bodies to compete for jobs on the back end. You know, in addition to whatever else you're bringing up front.
Well, right. Yeah. Right.
One
now,
top six forward, but probably more.
Right now you have Hughes, Hronek, Soucy in terms of guys who you're confident. Okay. Regulars, they're going to play big minutes for us. Juleson's under contract now. Freeman's under contract, but I would say, okay, Hughes, Hronek, Soucy, let's say they get Tyler Myers done. That's four. I think you want, yeah, two more guys in addition to Tyler Myers above Noah Juleson on the depth chart, right? Like whether that's a Brendan Dillon type and then another like that or whatever it is. But ideally, you want to be going into training camp with Noah Juleson as your seventh defenseman if you can swing that. Now, if he's your sixth defenseman and, and that's a problem you look to address or fix during the course of the season, that's fine. You can live with that. But I think the target is like, three more legit defensemen you feel really good about, one of whom might be Tyler Myers, if you can get the deal done. And, you know, your point about four or five guys who can give you more than four or five value, I do wonder if we're talking about, okay, can Hronek run a pair? Do they want to see that, but they need to find somebody who can play alongside Quinn Hughes to make that a possibility? If a 4-5 type who's more of a stylistic fit with Quinn Hughes, much like we saw with Ethan Bear, right? If that could be part of the answer rather than going and spending big on a true top four defenseman to pair with Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, I mean, if only there was like a veteran right-handed defensive defenseman that we think is a good stylistic fit for Quinn Hughes, maybe a former Vancouver
Canuck.
He's not
a 4-5 though. He's not a 4-5. He's a true top four guy.
Well, yeah, but he's also getting to a point where I think in the regular season, you probably want him to be a 4-5 guy. You know, if you're hoping to keep Chris Tanev healthy through June, I don't think you want him playing 22.
That's right? Fair. Okay, if Chris Tanev is on the table, but you have to attach a future second to move Ilya Mikheyev, are you pulling the trigger?
No, I don't think so.
Future third?
I don't think so.
How do we have to go here?
Oh, man, I just don't think they're going to do it. Like, I just don't think they're going to attach assets to get off Mikheyev. I think they'd rather go into the season with a somewhat flawed roster, trust that Mikheyev bounces back, and then figure it out in midstream. Like, I think they're willing to trade a third-round pick, but I think if they're trading a third-round pick or if they're trading a 2025 first or second or, you know, a top prospect, I think they're going to want, you know, I think they're going to want to roll the dice on a player who can help them. Like, that's just my understanding of their posture. I just don't think they're going to lose value in that way. I don't think they're going to see that as a good use of value. You know, you even think about, like, what's the value of the third-round pick? Well, one thing that a third-round pick can do for you, if you're the Vancouver Canucks, is you go in there and you're trying to mine Hunter Brustevich, right? And even if you're going to trade him in midseason, you trade him and he's appreciated so that instead of the dollar that he would have been as a third round pick, he's $1.75, $1.80, yep. Maybe even $2 by the time he did what he did. I mean, there, you know, I just don't see this club. I don't think this club's going to make the pick and then commit to a long course of development necessarily, but I just don't think they're going to attach a sweetener to get off of Mikheyev. I just don't think they want to, and I don't think they need to, or I don't think they think they need to. And so, it's going to be a fascinating one to watch.
I guess I would just, my point would be that I get it. Okay, we're only going to trade Mikheyev if we're bringing back talent, but freeing up we're only going to trade future assets if we're bringing back talent, but
yes.
Using a future asset to free up the Mikheyev cap space to sign a player, like that's there's an extra step in there, but it is a way of trading a future asset to bring talent into the organization, right? Like it still accomplishes the same thing. There's just an extra step.
Well, it does, but you're almost certainly going. I mean, look, if a unique opportunity comes, yeah. This team's going to pay to get it done, no question. But if it's, you know, standard player X, right, Matt Waugh, I just struggle to imagine that this club's going to spend assets and then spend money inefficiently to bring in a guy they don't see as like a real needle mover given their needs. Yeah. That's just my understanding of their posture. That, you know. Ever since this offseason began, my understanding of internal thinking about the matter has been if we part with an asset it's going to be to bring in future talent or like current talent, as opposed to as a sweetener to get off of a contract for a player that we actually still believe in and think will bounce back and think has never played a game for us healthy.
Well, that's the thing, right? And in my formulation, you're, yes, you were bringing in talent, but you're also losing the potential impact that Mikheyev could have for you, which is not probably going to equal his cap hit, but is probably not going to be zero for you next year either. Right now, to your point about third round picks, I mean, let's not forget, like, that was part of the package they sent to Calgary to get Nikita Zadorov. So whether it's drafting a player like Brustevich in the third round and he appreciates in value, or it's using it to get deals done in season, there are value to those picks. And I even think back to the process that brought Zadorov to the Canucks, right? Like, that was sending out a winger on a pretty big ticket who was not living up to that value in Anthony Beauvillier to a team that in the course of the season had needs develop where they wanted to pay for or they were willing to take on Anthony Beauvillier, and then turning around and flipping that asset to Calgary for Nikita Zadorov. And so I wonder if that is a bit of a partial template for the Ilya Mikheyev situation, right? Like, if no one's going to take him off your hands for free in the summer, keep him in house, play him, try to rehabilitate some of that value, and then maybe that situation comes up during the course of the season and you're able to do a more beneficial trade at that point.
6'3" guy, good defensively. If his skating burst returns and he has like 5 goals in 20 games. Like, I'm not even talking about setting the world on fire.
Yep.
If he just looks like the Ilya Mikheyev, you know, that we've never seen in Vancouver, but that we saw in Toronto, his value is going to come back pretty quick, honestly. And, you know, I still think there are some teams like, you know, the New York Islanders, right? So the Maple Leafs brought Mikheyev over when Lou Lamoriello was still the Maple Leafs GM, and they have that Russian scout. His first name's Jim. His last name starts with P. I just can't think of it off the top of my head. But, you know, that's like the guy who found Mikheyev. There's teams like that that I guarantee you have some regard for the player. Might not have regard for the player on his current contract. Yeah. You might need to, you know, whether it's retention or whether it's him bouncing back, whether it's eating some money in a trade back, you know, maybe it's a trade where you take on more money than the team that's taking on Mikheyev, but that money fits your roster better, right? Like a JG Pageau or something like that. I don't know. Just sort of throwing out a name, but you know, I think those options are kind of realistic. I just don't think they're going to pay. My understanding has been that they've been very reluctant. And you know, I've been saying this since the season ended.
Yep.
My understanding is that, I think they're confident enough in a Mikheyev bounce back. They believe in the player enough that they're not sweating the possibility or not even seriously considering the possibility of including or attaching a sweetener to him to get off that deal.
All right, that does it for us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal for being part of the crossover as always. And of course, Jason Bukla. We will be back tomorrow. Will we continue to see a flurry of activity around the NHL? Remember, game 6 of the final, not until Friday, so we've got some time before the Panthers and the Oilers get back at it. We'll be back tomorrow, as always. Keep it right here on Sportsnet 650.